It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
A bomb from Thomas. It's gone. It's been his night.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Boston Celtics postgame radio program. I am your host, Patrick Gilroy. This evening, alongside Calvin Chamberlain, we've got Nick Sesento behind the glass taking your phone calls on our Movement Watches toll-free phone lines. The number to join us here, 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. On what has to be considered probably the most disappointing loss of the season, the Celtics lose in Houston 107-106 in a game that I think could have been one of those character-building, back-building sort of games that I hearken back to the Cleveland game last year where Avery Bradley stole the game with a dagger. Houston's not Cleveland, but the Celtics have been in desperate need of a galvanizing win. And tonight's victory would have been just that victory to continue this relatively hot streak. And I'm hesitant to call it a hot streak, Calvin, because, yes, going into tonight, the Celtics have won 6 out of 8. But none of those wins have really instilled the Celtics fan base with the confidence that they've been looking for. Yes, going into tonight, the Celtics were third in the Eastern Conference, just 2 games behind Cleveland for the top spot in the conference. But that says a lot more about Cleveland than it does the Celtics. So again, I said it in the post game on Friday that despite the fact that it was a victory over Sacramento, it didn't teach us anything new about the Celtics, nor did they take the next step in their progression. And I said that this team desperately needed a character-building, galvanizing victory. And I thought for sure tonight in Houston, the way this thing was going down at the end, and we'll get into the crucial mistake that James Harden made that gave the Celtics a chance to win this game, steal this game, and we'll get into the fact that the Celtics missed 2 layups, one by Isaiah Thomas, one by Al Horford. So layups missed by the Celtics' 2 All-Stars, their 2 best players, that should have stolen this victory, Calvin. Instead, it becomes a demoralizing loss in Houston in a game that never should have ended in the fashion that it did.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would go so far as to call it demoralizing. Houston's been playing well. They have been on a roll. They're a good team. They're playing at home, you know, not on a back-to-back. All indications are that this would be a difficult game for the Celtics. They came out flat. They didn't play well in the first half. I guess we'll get more into that later. And they really, you know, made a nice run there with their bench in the third quarter when they went on that 19-2 run. And they really pulled themselves back into the game. Yeah, the Rockets, you know, made some plays late in the fourth quarter. Harden made a couple of layups late in the game to make it interesting. And then obviously we can, you know, again, get into that flagrant foul situation that gave the Celtics that last chance. Horford had a good look. It just didn't go down. I think it's just one of those things. You gotta look past it and go on to the next game. But overall, in evaluating how I feel about this team, I wouldn't necessarily hinge that on one missed or made shot.
Well, you know, and Calvin, I don't want to overreact to a win or a loss because I feel like that's what Celtics fans have been doing for the majority of this young season, and I think it's because this season has been relatively tumultuous. For a season where the team came in with these incredibly high expectations, whether they were warranted or not. Unfortunately, whether it's because of injury, because of lost players in the offseason, or because the fact that this team just isn't playing the same defense that it did last year, yeah, you know, they're on pace to win 48 to 50 games, and that's about 5 games off where they were expected to be. But it's been the manner in which they've lost the games that they've lost, and it's been the opponents in which they've lost them too, that has led the Celtics fan base to sort of overreact and panic a little bit. And I've been looking for, a 9 out of 10 stretch, or, you know, 7 out of 8, or a stretch where they go through and they beat some pretty damn good playoff type of teams to really galvanize this group and show the Celtics fan base that, no, this team is for real. They're better than the sum of their parts, and they will be better and exceed last year's 48, you know, win total. And I thought tonight, although not a monumental game in the grand scheme of things, I thought because of everything that you just said, because they came out flat, because of the 19-2 run, because of the manner in which they were sort of grit and grinding out the fourth quarter until the end where Harden took over, I thought this was one of those potential victories where any time that you win on the road in the NBA, it's a big deal. But to go into Houston, where they have been playing well, and to defeat a team where the opponent, regardless of record, has clearly got far and away the best player on the court, I think it's something that the Celtics team hasn't done this year, and it's something that this team will need to do, if only to prove it to themselves that, yes, they are for real, that some of the expectations that were put upon them were justified. And here we are, Calvin. We're approaching, you know, we're, what, December 5th, so we're 20 days away from Christmas, and I don't think that the Celtics team has proven it to the fans. I don't think they've proven it to themselves that they are as good as advertised. And until this team is able to go on the road and steal a victory in a Houston, steal a victory in a San Antonio, steal a victory in a Cleveland, I don't think that that win expectation will be justified, because for the Celtics to win 55 games, for them to go two rounds in the playoffs, they've got to be capable of beating some of these teams. And they just haven't proven it yet this year.
No, and I'm not I was never sure that 55 was a realistic expectation. I think some of that comes with the inflated notion that Horford is still a superstar when he, you know, what he really is a valuable role player who sort of does everything, but he doesn't want to be, and granted, you know, you lose some of that in Isaiah sort of stepping up this year and becoming a superstar, and Avery Bradley essentially taking on the secondary scoring role. But I think that maybe 55, it might have been a little bit high in terms of what you might expect from this team. And I could be wrong. You know, maybe they could get there. But I think in this Eastern Conference, that's not necessarily that big a deal. I think the two seed is still right there in reach. If it's, you know, 52 instead of 55, is it really that big of a difference?
I don't think it's that big of a difference, and you're right, because of the way the Eastern Conference is playing out, that second seed is certainly up for grabs and will remain up for grabs for the remainder of the season. But one thing that Celtics fans have been clamoring for years now, whether it's the 26-win edition of the Celtics under Brad Stevens' first season, the 40-win edition in year two, the 48-win edition last year, and the 50-plus win, we think, edition this year, we can all agree. Whether you're a fan, whether you're in the media, a broadcaster, a TV guy, an internet guy, whatever you are, if you spend a considerable amount of your time dissecting and analyzing the Boston Celtics, I think everybody across every platform in the media can agree that, yes, Isaiah Thomas is one hell of a player, that Al Horford, it's better to have him than it is not to have him. But this team is still in desperate need of that individual superstar that can take over a game, if only because in the playoffs, when the game gets tight in the fourth quarter and defenses lock in and you're unable to run your offense, how many times over the years did you, as a Lakers fan, see Kobe Bryant individually take over playoff games? How many times, as Celtics fans, did we see Paul Pierce individually take over playoff games? Tonight, as the game got closer and closer and closer in the fourth quarter, I think Celtics fans got a reminder of what it's like to have a true elite NBA offensive player on their team. That's what James Harden is. That's what he does. He's able to create for himself when everything else breaks down. And Houston's offense in the fourth quarter, especially the final few minutes, wasn't anything overcomplicated. It's get the ball to Harden and let him do his thing. And that leads to success. And I would hate to say this now, it's only December, but, and I know that Houston's in the Western Conference, but because of the individual talent of James Harden, there's a strong possibility that this team could be a stronger playoff team than the Celtics. Up and down the roster, the Celtics, I think, have got a clear advantage over Houston. But again, in the NBA, if you can have that singular talent and the guy that's capable of taking over a close game in the fourth quarter all by himself, that gives you a clear advantage. And I think, again, Celtics fans were reminded of that clear advantage as they watched Harden do his thing, get to the free throw line, can threes, and save Houston from what would have been a difficult home loss.
I don't quite see it the same way. Rather than a disparity of, you know, a fourth quarter talent in terms of James Harden versus what the Celtics provide, I think if you look at the numbers over the last couple of seasons, Isaiah Thomas has been pretty high up in the list of fourth quarter scorers, and they seem to get him the ball in that time. I think the difference between the Rockets and the Celtics right now, comes, for me, comes down to identity. The Rockets know what they are. They're a team that's going to take rock and roll with James Harden in that same spot at the very top of the three-point line every time. Try to get alley-oops to Clint Capela as much as they can, and then hit the shooter. The Celtics, they're sort of more of a hodgepodge. You see them run sort of different sets. Sometimes they run the pick with Isaiah. They don't. Sometimes they don't use him enough. Sometimes they, you know, run the offense with Al Horford, sort of have Cutter working behind him, and he finds Adler or Crowder or somebody for a back or for a three-pointer, and sometimes he completely fades out of the offense. It seems like night in, night out, they're not consistent in terms of sets they want to run. Sometimes Bradley's more involved in the offense than in other nights. When I look at the Rockets, it's like they're night in, night out, same thing every night. They know what they want to do, and the Celtics don't always seem to know what they want to do.
But you've got that luxury when you've got a Harden on your team. It makes everything look better. So you're right. They don't have to overcoach that team. They don't have to come up with, you know, these sexy plays to get guys like Isaiah Thomas open. And the comparison you brought up is a fair one because this is a December regular season game, Calvin. But again, I prefaced my comment by saying you watched Kobe do it in the playoffs. We watched Paul Pierce do it in the playoffs. What we've seen out of Isaiah Thomas come playoff time, whether it's because of his lack of height or just because he's just not that great of an individual scorer when it comes time to take over a game and go 1-on-5. And that's probably due to his height. The Celtics don't have that guy. Harden is that guy. We're in a playoff game. You're comfortable allowing him to take over. And I think we saw glimpses of what Harden can do in the fourth quarter tonight, which is what makes Houston one of those dangerous teams. They're never going to be a favorite in the Western Conference. If they're an 8 seed, though, nobody wants to face them. A 7 seed, nobody wants to face them because of the individual talent of a guy like Harden and the NBA's sort of dynamic, the way that the game is played today, generally trends towards teams with the best player on the floor trending towards success come playoff time rather than the complete team dynamic. And I think Celtics fans have learned that the hard way the last two seasons. This is the Celtics post game show right here, CLNS Radio, clnsradio.com. Celtics lose in Houston tonight. The final score, 107 for Houston, 106. The Celtics lose in heartbreaking fashion. Isaiah Thomas misses a layup. Celtics get the ball back. Al Horford misses a layup. Celtics come out on the wrong side of a 107 to 106 score. Our toll-free phone lines brought to you by Movement Watches are open 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. And of course, as always, our opening segment is powered by our friends at Blue Apron, whose mission is to make incredible home-cooked meals accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. You know, the strong family bonds. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often together. Now for less than just 10 bucks per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-proportioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals in perfect time for the holidays. So what you want to do is head on over to blueapron.com/CLNS. Make sure you put that CLNS in there. You will love how good it feels and how good it tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. One more time, it's blueapron.com/CLNS. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Celtics lose. Final score 107 to 106. It's Patrick Gilroy alongside Calvin Chamberlain, Nick Sesento behind the glass, taking your phone calls on the Movement Watches toll free phone line 347-215-7771. I have to say, Calvin, you sort of in passing said something to start the program, and it was that the Celtics came out flat. And in big games this season, it's been a bit of a trend. Now, I understand that Brad Stevens is basketball Jesus in Boston right now. I mean, he's a guy that can do no wrong, and rightfully so. He's really exceeded expectations since the moment he got here. I mean, it's easy to forget how devastated Celtics fans were when they learned that Doc Rivers didn't want to be a part of the rebuild just a few months after the Marathon bombings, where he went on, had a giant press conference and said that he considered himself a Bostonian and wanted to be here forever. A few months later, he changed his mind, doesn't want to be a part of the rebuild. Okay, we move on. We understand, Brad. But now you bring Brad even Doc. He's a college coach. We've got bad experience here in Boston with big-time college coaches, with Rick Pitino. He's an unproven talent, and he's done nothing but exceed those expectations. But this year, Calvin, it's the first Brad Stevens has had real expectations entering a season. And warranted or not, fair or not, there are expectations for this team to succeed. And they've had a history of coming out flat. This year, they've lost to some pretty dismal opponents. Last year, the loss to a terrible Lakers team, multiple losses to a terrible Brooklyn team. Is this a Brad Stevens problem, in your opinion? I like your opinion because it's from a distance. You're not emotionally wrapped up in all this the way that Celtics fans are. When you look at Brad Stevens, do you say that if you had the choice between he and Luke Walton as a Lakers fan, forget the analyst side of you, as a Lakers fan, do you take Luke or do you take Brad?
I mean, right now I take Brad because it's too early for me to evaluate Luke as a head coach beyond, you know, some things that I like what he's done. But I'm not really sure how Luke responds to adversity or, you know, players not really wanting to run his system. And I think that tonight you can – theoretically you can blame it on Brad Stevens because what I saw in the first half essentially was that the Celtics fell into the Rockets' trap of setting up in – you know, wanting to take three-point shots. When the Celtics do want to take three-point shots, that is Brad Stevens' offense. But the difference between the Rockets and the Celtics is that the Rockets have a bunch of spot-up three-point shooters who can take the ball and shoot right over the top of people. The Celtics don't really have a lot of three-point shooters that can just shoot with a man in their face, and they usually create their three-point shots through, you know, dribble drives by Isaiah, Avery Bradley, and sort of running high picks with Al Horford and taking three-point shots behind that. I sort of saw that more in the second half where they had their three-point shots, where in the first half, it seemed like every time Houston jacked up a three, the Celtics immediately wanted to get it back in the other end, and they were taking pull-up shots that just weren't part of what I think is their game. So if you want to put that on Stevens, then you can, but, you know, guys also go off script.
Well, it's been a desperate search for answers this season. We've had, myself included, we overanalyzed the schedule. The Celtics have got 15 games in the month of December. That's a lot of games. The Celtics have had some funky scheduling scenarios come up where they're, you know, I think it's 22 back-to-back games this year, which I believe is an NBA record. And that's part and partial to the fact that they're on national TV, I think 28 or 29 times this year, which is a giant step up from last year. So when you get that national media exposure and the national interest is there and you're back on TNT, you're back on ABC, you're back on ESPN, you're going to have these quirky schedules. But I think a combination of things has happened here, Calvin. It's the fact that you had 40% of your 10-man roster miss multiple games to start the season. It's Kelly Olynyk, it's Marcus Smart, it's Al Horford. You've got Brad trying desperately to replace the Evan Turner role, which I think everybody underplayed coming into the season. I mean, Evan Turner played a huge role on this team, and he'll never live up to being that number two pick in the draft. He'll never be a 20-point-a-game guy, but he was your ultimate utility knife. The Celtics certainly missed that, especially closing out games. You better believe that Evan Turner would have been on the floor to close this game out tonight. And I think that, believe it or not, although Al Horford is a monumentally better basketball player than Jared Sullinger, Jared Sullinger knew his role, and when he was healthy and in relatively decent shape, he succeeded at his role, and that was to carve out space with his giant ass and rebound the basketball. The Celtics have been a dismal rebounding team this year, and nobody's looking for them to be an above-average rebounding team. Nobody even expects them to be an average rebounding team. To be slightly below average would be considered a victory for the Celtics team, and it's, quite frankly, their inability to rebound the basketball and their constant they're constantly giving their opponent second and third shot opportunities, which are not only moral backbreakers for this team, it doesn't allow this team to go out there and create any sort of momentum. And if you watch the Celtics with any sort of regularity, you can see that their inability to rebound the basketball and their inability to grab defensive rebounds has really been a critical failure for this team all the way around. And again, with these large expectations for the season, with people saying that the season will be a failure unless they advance in the playoffs, I've been saying for weeks now that there's nobody on the roster that can fulfill that role. So the Celtics are in desperate need of a roster upgrade. I think people can forget about the likes of, you know, Boogie Cousins coming to Boston. If that happens, great, but I wouldn't bet anything on that. It's not a realistic possibility. I've been covering this team for too many years, heard too many rumors, and too many scenarios. I mean, Jimmy Butler was all but a done deal, according to everybody in the know, 6 months ago. And Jimmy Butler's not going anywhere. You know, we hear this all the time that, okay, the Celtics have got financial flexibility. They've got assets that people want. And you and I had a debate about a month ago where I thought that you were joking when you said that the Lakers have got better young assets than the Celtics. But as the season plays out and the young assets sort of start to develop a little bit more, I think we're both right. And I'll get into why I think we're both right later on in the program. But what I know for sure, and what is not up for debate, is that the Celtics need desperate help in the front court, rebounding the basketball, protecting the rim, and being a more traditional big man. Because Al Horford is ultimately 10 times more effective playing the power forward than he is when he's in the IT and D lineup that isn't playing any defense and he's forced to play center. It's not working for Al Horford, and it is not working for the Celtics. So when you remove Boogie Cousins from the big man equation, I think there's one guy that makes sense out there, one guy, and that's Andrew Bogut. And you started to hear his name a little bit more as the season's gone along. Once December 15th comes and goes, Dallas will be eligible to trade Andrew Bogut. And I wouldn't be surprised. As a matter of fact, I would be shocked if he wasn't moved. I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics weren't on his short list and the short list of potential suitors that can give Dallas something back in return. But if the Celtics are going to make noise come playoff time, if the Celtics are going to live up to expectations, it's got to be Andrew Bogut or an Andrew Bogut type. Because I don't think Danny Ainge is giving up any of these Nets picks. I don't think he's giving up Jaylen Brown. I don't think he's giving up even a Kelly Olynyk to go ahead and improve the front court. So that limits your opportunities to go out there and capitalize on what should be a season in which this team improves, maybe not dramatically like they have the last two seasons, going from 26 to 40, from 40 to 48, but they should make a 4, 5, 6, 10-game jump over last year. But their ultimate failure could be their inability to rebound the basketball and protect the rim. And with all that being said, Larry H. Russell, CLNS's own Larry H. Russell, has got exclusive content regarding a potential trade target for the Celtics. It's Andrew Bogut. The secret is out. Larry H. Russell has the inside scoop. So what everybody needs to do, he's not going to give it to us tonight. He's doing what us veteran radio guys do, and he's teasing it. And I don't blame him, because what he's got is good. So what I encourage all Celtics fans to do is head on over. You want to download the CLNS radio app. That's the first thing you need to do. And then tomorrow morning, first thing, Larry H. Russell is going to release the information that he's got on the Celtics newsfeed channel, the CLNS Boston Celtics newsfeed channel. So all you have to do is type in Celtics newsfeed on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you can't do that, just type in CLNS on iTunes or Stitcher. But one way or the other, when you wake up tomorrow, you'll know if the Celtics are closer or further away from meeting and exceeding their expectations because of this exclusive information that Larry H. Russell has gotten a hold of. I don't even know what it is. I'm so curious to see what it is, because Larry is a no-nonsense kind of guy. So I've been doing this for 16 years, and I've been guilty over those 16 years of clickbait, let's say. I mean, at one point, I think I said the Celtics were Avery Bradley was the determining difference between the trading. If you trade him, you get Boogie Cousins. If you don't trade him, you don't get him. And that got 7,000 clicks on the old NBA on NBC.com that my program was on. There was probably 25% truth to that. But that's what we did. That's what we were encouraged to do by our bosses over at NBC back in the day. That is what this game is all about. Larry H. Russell doesn't play for any game. So when he calls me and he says, I've got this, I need you to do this for me, I tend to believe that there's something there. So again, if you want the latest inside information on the Celtics and their courtship, let's say, of Andrew Bogut, what you need to do is very simple. Head on over to the Celtics newsfeed channel. If you don't have access to the Celtics newsfeed, just go to iTunes and Stitcher, type in Celtics newsfeed, you get it that way, or download the free CLNS radio app. This is the Celtics postgame radio show. It is Patrick Gilroy alongside Calvin Chamberlain, Nick Sesento behind the glass. Our movement watches toll-free phone lines, 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. When we come back, I do want to hear from Nick Sesento, who will from behind the glass, because secretly right now he's sending me little messages saying, Bogut, please God, no. I think Bogut is exactly what this team needs. It is the Celtics postgame show. It is CLNS Radio and CLNSRadio.com.
Not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference, so it's always important to know where your food comes from. I'd like to take a moment and tell you about Blue Apron. Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest standards for their community of artisanal suppliers, family-run farms, fisheries, and ranchers. Folks, for less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron is bringing you only the best in variety, flexibility, and ease of use. The recipe cards are incredible. This month, I made pan-seared chicken and roasted fall vegetables with butter caper sauce, spicy lotus root and purple carrot stir-fry with sweet potato noodles, lemongrass roasted pork with Romanesco cauliflower and coconut rice. These entrees may sound complicated, but with Blue Apron's recipe cards, they are easy and fun and get the whole family involved. We'd love for you to try Blue Apron, support the Celtics postgame show and the entire CLNS radio network, and guess what? It's not going to cost you anything. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping. All you have to do is go to blueapron.com/CLNS. You will love how it feels. You will love how it tastes. You will love creating incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. Again, no risk involved. Three free meals, free shipping. That's blueapron.com/CLNS. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
CLNS Radio's leading online coverage of the Boston Celtics now even more comprehensive than ever. From the Celtics postgame show, to the Garden Report, to CSL, and to Celtics Beat, CLNS Radio's Boston Celtics news feed provides narrated breaking news, game recaps, and news and notes for the NBA's winningest franchise, all provided in real time. Don't have the time to surf the web or search engines and plunge your head into your computer or smartphone to read up on all the latest on the Celtics? No problem. Multitask while listening to CLNS's Celtics news feed. And for the 2016-17 NBA campaign, the Boston Celtics pregame report with myself, Larry H. Russell, will be released on the news feed on game days at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, making it the first pregame report to air anywhere. We will give you a featured interview from someone providing opposing insight, pregame notes, and go on a Celtics draft pick watch, all in just 12 minutes or less. Available on the Boston Celtics news feed on iTunes and Stitcher, and the CLNS Radio mobile podcast app.
Hey, this is Nick Gelso, the founder of CLNS Radio, and I just want to take a moment to talk to you about Movement Watches. Movement Watches, if you haven't heard of this company, it started by two broke college kids that wanted to wear stylish watches but couldn't afford them. So what did they do? They started their own company. As you know, CLNS Radio was founded by a bunch of Celtics fans way back in 2009, and from there we started a company that made a career out of it, so we can absolutely relate to the owners of Movement Watches. And let me tell you, I purchased the Chrono Gunmetal watch. This watch is so sleek, black stainless steel, it's light, it's versatile, it's great for dress occasions or even casual affairs. A little bit more about Movement Watches. They start at $95. I purchased the Chrome Gunmetal watch for under $100, and I know with the watch I purchased, you're looking at $400 to $500 in a department store. So give yourself a big discount right in time for the holidays. You can get 15% off today with free shipping, and if you don't like the watch, guess what? You can return it for free. All you have to do is go to movementwatches.com/Celticsbeat. Wait a second, even the name is cool. It's spelled MVMTwatches.com/Celticsbeat. Again, go to MVMTwatches.com/Celticsbeat.
Welcome back. It is the Boston Celtics postgame radio show. I'm your host, Patrick Gilroy, this evening alongside Calvin Chamberlain, Nick Sesento behind the glass following the Celtics' disappointing, heartbreaking, crushing defeat at the hands of the Houston Rockets down there in Houston. Final score 107 to 106. Don't forget, guys, Celtics, CLNS's own Josue Pavone is live in Houston covering the Boston Celtics. What you want to do is check him out on the Garden Report and exclusive post-game interviews and reaction for tonight's game. Stay tuned to the CLNS Radio YouTube channel for more exclusive content. I'll be really curious to see what Josue's got coming tonight over there on the Garden Report as well as on the CLNS YouTube channel because, again, Calvin, you and I debated a little bit to start the show. I think that this is a demoralizing loss for this team. I think that they saw the ability to steal a victory on the road against a good opponent. It was right there. It was literally two layups from the Celtics, two All-Stars away. A layup by Isaiah Thomas missed. Celtics get lucky. Ball goes out of bounds off Houston, gives the Celtics one more opportunity, where Al Horford, of all people, takes his defender off the dribble, gets all the way to the rim, and his layup simply rims out. That is the definition, in my opinion, of a demoralizing loss.
Well, can I say something controversial here? I'm not sure I love the flagrant foul call, and maybe that's why I'm not really on the same page that this loss is demoralizing, because I sort of thought that Smart was already fouling him at the moment that I thought it should have just been a personal for that reason. Granted, he did go high and elbow him, but even if you want to call that a flagrant foul, it's still sort of a fortuitous lucky situation for the Celtics to even be in that position.
Calvin, you're right. You are right. It's a debatable call at best, and you would expect on your home floor that Houston would get the benefit of the doubt. So you are right. But what preceded that? What preceded the flagrant call? Houston went on a 10-2 run to close the thing out leading up to that flagrant foul call. So again, it lends to the fact the Celtics were right there. They had a lead in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter. And again, their inability to rebound the ball and defend and their giving their opponent multiple chance opportunities allows teams like Houston that are offensively talented to come back and come back quickly. So when you take all that into consideration, I think it becomes even more demoralizing because the Celtics did give up a 10-2 run. It looked like Houston was going to run away with this thing. And then the basketball gods gave them a gift. They gave them two free throws and the ball back with a chance to steal a victory on the road. So I think when you look at it as a total picture, it becomes even worse than if you just isolate the final minute and a half of the game.
I would argue that the substitution pattern itself sort of, you know, created the circumstances in which they went into a 10-2 run. I mean, James Harden sat out half the fourth quarter. Then I was surprised by how long he sat in the fourth quarter, actually. End of the third, you know, half the fourth, that when he came back is essentially when they went on their run. Again, I'm not taking anything away from how the Celtics played overall because I think they did a lot of things better than they normally do. They really protected the ball. They didn't have their 10th turnover until there were 4 minutes left in the game. You talked about how the Celtics are not a very good rebounding team earlier, which is true, but tonight they were very effective on the boards, or more specifically, keeping Houston off the boards. Some of that has to do with their style, obviously. But Houston is a pretty good rebounding team. You know, a guy like Capella is a great rebounder. But I thought they did a really good job sealing them off. They did a good job scoring in the paint. There are a lot of positives to take from this game. And I think to come, you know, down entirely on, wow, this was a painful, disappointing loss. I understand that, you know, in the short term. But if you want to look at the big picture, there are a lot of things to be positive about after this game.
And look, I know what you're saying. And the beauty of you is that you are emotionally uninvolved, and that's a wonderful thing to have that sort of perspective. But I will say this: Celtics fans, and I think the Celtics organization, going into the season, thought that they were beyond the point of moral victories, and you know, losing a game to a slightly above average team in Houston, that's the definition of looking for a moral victory. And moral victories were great a couple of years ago when the Celtics were a 26 win team. They were even great 2 years ago when they were a 40 win team, but I think everybody in and around New England and anybody that follows the Celtics and quote-unquote bleeds green really believed, and maybe they believed prematurely, but it's not their fault because the national media told them to, but for whatever reason, they believed that the Celtics were beyond that point of moral victories. And if we're going to start reaching back and being a moral victory type of team, then I think it's time to re-examine the expectations that everybody's got for this particular edition of the Boston Celtics. Now, before we went to break, we started a discussion about Andrew Bogut that I do want to bring Nick Cecento on because he is not a Bogut guy. But I feel like I need to clarify one thing. Yes, Larry H. Russell will have late-breaking information tomorrow, but I've got late-breaking information right now. Andrew Bogut left tonight's game with a knee injury. He will not return. An MRI is to come, and it is the same knee that kept him out of the NBA Finals last year. So while he is a potential trade target for the Boston Celtics and other teams, depending on how this MRI goes, Andrew Bogut might not be the answer in the front court for anybody in the NBA this season. And that's a disappointing piece of news for me anyways, if only because once that first domino falls, generally other trades are to come. So whether Andrew Bogut came to the Celtics or not, the fact that it looked like Dallas was going to be shopping him sooner rather than later, that meant to me that, well, once he goes, maybe a flurry of other moves would follow. And hopefully the Celtics would see their deficiencies in the front court and address that need without having to wait till the All-Star break and the trade deadline and sort of give away these games that they shouldn't have to give away. Because, again, like you said, Calvin, there is an opportunity there in the Eastern Conference. And despite the fact that here we are on December 5th and the Celtics are only 3 games over .500, they are right there. I mean, they are right there with Cleveland. I believe they're 2.5 behind Cleveland right now. The Eastern Conference at the moment is up for grabs, and the 2 seed is a realistic possibility for about 4 teams, and the Celtics are one of them. So a talent upgrade is something that I'm looking for, and I thought Bogut could certainly have helped the Celtics. We're not saying that he's done for the year or anything, but what happened tonight in Dallas is certainly not a good sign.
Yeah, to clarify my earlier comments, like I'm not calling for moral victories. I'm not saying that the Celtics fans should be happy about the loss. All I'm saying is look at trends. Look at the bigger picture. Look how they played beyond a one-point swing either way when you're evaluating this team for the long term. Be disappointed in the loss. You know, look where you are in the standings. That's fine. All of that's fine. But if you're going to talk about big picture, talk about, you know, you have to consider the things they did well tonight. And as far as Bogut goes, I do think that this team would, you know, be served by adding Bogut to it. It's an interesting move because I'm not sure what roster pieces they'd be willing to give up to acquire Bogut other than the obvious move of dumping Amir Johnson. But Andrew Bogut makes over $11 million. He's a free agent after this season, so I doubt Dallas would want to take on a lot of salary in return in terms of long-term yearly salary with players unless it's a guy like a Bradley, who obviously you're not going to include in a Bogut deal. Maybe this is a moot point now because of his knee injury, but Andrew Bogut, you know, knee injuries come with Andrew Bogut. If you want to take on Andrew Bogut's contract, you have to expect the occasional knee injury. He's not going to play 82 games. He's going to have knee injuries. You just pray and hope that they don't come during the playoffs. I think financially, would you be willing, you know, hypothetically, for example, to give up Jerebko and Amir? You'd probably have to give Dallas a pick, because they'd be taking on Jerebko's contract for another year, but obviously that would weaken your bench as well.
It would, and I think something like that. I don't know, because I don't think Dallas would be. I think Dallas is looking forward to the financial flexibility and salary cap relief when Andrew Bogut comes off the books, which is why I think Amir is the perfect starting point, because their salaries are almost identical, and they're both. Amir's got a team option for next year, so he is, in all intents and purposes, a free agent going into this offseason. So I think that Dallas would look for Amir, and they would look for some bit of talent that's got relatively high upside, right? So, of course, it's not a Jaylen Brown, but is it Demetrius Jackson? Is it a future Celtics first-round draft pick? I think it's Amir and a bit of something that they can sell to their fans. And maybe it's one of the Celtics overseas draft and stash guys that are putting up great numbers right now. But I think that Amir is the starting point, and the ending point is somebody with some sort of upside, but not the same upside that a guy like Jaylen Brown has. Because I don't think that Dallas is going anywhere. I think soon they're going to realize that they're not going anywhere. And the best thing that they can do if they really want to keep Dirk around is add more talent around Dirk. And the best way to do that is to rid themselves of high-salary veteran players that aren't going to make a difference for a terrible basketball team. So believe me, Dallas is desperately seeking some cap relief, and the best way to do that is to watch Andrew Bogut walk away at the end of the season. Well, it's no difference if Andrew Bogut walks away or if Amir Johnson walks away. Either way, you're going to get that same cap relief, and I think that Andrew Bogut, when relatively healthy, is a much better fit for this edition of the Celtics than Amir Johnson is.
Oh, I agree with that. I just think there's no motivation for Dallas to pull the trigger on that unless they get something at least like the Celtics pick for next season. I think a draft pick is probably a requirement to make something like that happen.
Absolutely is. I mean, do you think, in your opinion, do you think Dallas, because of their inability to win basketball games and their sort of their status and stature in the NBA right now, do you think that they would take on a long-term project, whether it's Isuble or the big Croatian kid that's put up 35 points last night? Do you think there's any interest in a guy like Demetrius Jackson or James Young? Or do you think that you have to take it a step above those guys and potentially give up somebody with some first-round talent, some first-round upside?
They might hypothetically be interested in that as a throw-in, but I don't think that's going to be the leverage that gets the deal done. I think a pick is probably required, or at least somebody of the stature of a Rozier, and the Celtics probably aren't interested in that.
And Celtics fans, whether they realize it or not, I mean, they don't have their own – well, they do have their own pick this year, but they're going to swap picks with Brooklyn. So Dallas would have to wait until the 2018 draft to sort of cash in on that. And there's a lot of pieces in play, and it's a very interesting dynamic when you talk about a team like Dallas, because we've been there before. I mean, we've been there with Paul Pierce as recently as 3 years ago here in Boston. You've been there with Kobe being a Lakers guy. You've got a guy who's probably the team's all-time best player, no doubt about it, in Dirk. You've got a guy that is still effective at 38 years old in Dirk. You've also got a guy that probably, in a moment of true honesty, would rather be competing for championships at his advanced age than competing for ping pong balls. And for whatever reason, Mark Cuban has been unable, whether it's because Dallas isn't a desirable destination for free agents, whether it's because of poor trades, or just because poor bad luck and guys getting injured, whatever the reason, following their championship almost a half a dozen years ago, Dallas has been unable to put great teams on the floor. And this year, it looks like Dallas doesn't have a sniff at the playoffs. It looks like their season is going down in the tubes faster than they could possibly try and resuscitate the possibilities of even being a fringe playoff team this year. So they're going to strip this team of their talented veterans at some point. But you're right. There needs to be some motivation there on Dallas's side. What would Dallas be looking for? Because they've got two goals in mind here. And over again, they don't want to see Dirk leave. But Dirk, on the other hand, has his own motivations, and he needs to be given a reason to stay. And I'm not sure a Celtics first-round draft pick in 2018 is really going to excite Dirk about the possibilities of Dallas rebounding and becoming at least a respectable playoff team in the next year or two out there in the very deep Western Conference.
I think Dirk's legacy resides in Dallas. There's little to no chance in my mind that he's ever going to leave at this point. You know, what is his value to another team compared to what it is to the Mavericks? He's broken down. You see him, you know, not playing hardly at all this season. Mark Cuban will take care of Dirk in a way that nobody else will at this point. And I'm not sure how much basketball Dirk has left in him anyway. So
you can't say that. You can't say that without backing it up. I think that they're not playing him extended and heavy minutes for a very strategic reason. I think they know he's got limited bullets left in that body. And they've got to capitalize on those bullets, whether it's when the Mavericks get good again or because he's still – a damn good trade asset. Paul Pierce was unable to move that playoff series in Boston against the Knicks, his final playoff series as a Celtic. And he went to Brooklyn and put up nearly 16 points a game. And people said, okay, he was inspired that year. And then he went to Washington and was a real difference maker for a Wizards team. And he still has his moments on a very competitive Clippers team right now. You've seen it across the NBA time and time again, where these veteran players look like they're done in a certain city and they're able to come back and have one or two or even 3 years where they are still a certain percentage of the player that they used to be. And you can't tell me there isn't motivation for a team like a San Antonio, like a Clippers, like a Toronto, like these teams that think that they are almost there when it comes to winning a championship this year. They would give up a pretty penny and a nice little package for a guy like Dirk. Now, they wouldn't give up what the Nets gave up, because that was just stupid, what they gave up for KG and Paul Pierce. But you can't tell me that there isn't a general manager out there that wouldn't give up multiple future first-rounders for an opportunity to put Dirk on his team, if only for a few months, and give his team the best chance to win an NBA championship right now.
No, I'm not saying that there's not another general manager that would trade for Dirk given the right set of circumstances. I think his contract makes that difficult. What I am saying is that Dirk is not going to want to leave Dallas at this point. He has a special relationship with Mark Cuban. He has a title, so he's not a guy who's going to go title chasing. And more importantly, again, he's played in five games this season.
I know. And, and, yeah. it's a huge drop off, right? Because last year he was still wildly productive, and usually you see a slower decline than this precipitous drop off that we've seen from Dirk. It's sort of unprecedented. I mean, last year I believe he still put up 18 points a game. He was competitive the entire season, start to finish, and then this year there's almost nothing, which tells you there's a deeper backstory there. What that backstory is, I'd be very curious to find out, because Dirk's a prideful guy. But I'll tell you what, nobody thought Paul Pierce was going to leave here for all those reasons that you just stated. He had been a lifelong Celtic. His legacy was here. He either held or was in second place on every meaningful record in the record books for the most storied franchise.
Well, there goes this edition of the Blue Apron Dallas Mavericks postgame show.
I'm still here.
What's up, Calvin? How you doing?
What's up, Nick? I guess Patrick dropped off for a moment. Yeah,
he was getting into the Dallas Mavericks talk. I was sitting here about to call it a night listening to all this.
Listen,
Dallas Mavericks
chat. I am back. I truly apologize for anybody out there listening. I am using horrible hotel Wi-Fi right now, and it's more interested in kicking me off of my program than it is in keeping me on my program. So again, I apologize to the masses out there that were glued into their Dirk Nowitzki Dallas Mavericks post-game radio program.
Look, you know me. I'll talk about anything. I've got.
I know you.
That's why
I love having you on with me, because unlike most of these people, and I love every one of my coworkers, every one of my co-hosts, but most of them are unable to sustain a meaningful conversation about any team other than the Celtics, for good reason. It's you know what they get paid to do. But I've listened to you for a long time, Calvin. You know your stuff about just about every team in the league. So I can get into this kind of stuff with you, and it's a lot of fun. But, Nick, while you're there, because I do want to thank you for stepping in for my total silence. It's radio on professionalism 101. I'm very curious to know, as a Celtics guy and as a guy that watches as much Celtics basketball as anybody, and for a guy that has talked with me about their glaring needs in the front court, You're not interested in Bogut? A healthy Bogut doesn't intrigue you?
Well, is he healthy is the first question.
Well, he was when we started the debate, but he isn't any longer.
Yeah, in just that short span, he's no longer healthy, which is pretty much par for the course when it comes to Andrew Bogut. My biggest question is this, and I was reading the Celtics Beat podcast Facebook group. It was Larry H. Russell discussing this sometime early in the last week, before the weekend definitely, discussing the virtues of trading for Andrew Bogut. And my question is this, does adding Andrew Bogut put this team over the top and make us a contender?
Probably not. But does it make this team better and increase their chances to get to, say, an Eastern Conference final?
Yeah, but I mean, you okay, but second place is first loser. So, I mean, if we're not going to, you know, if it's not going to make us a contender.
No.
Now, the second question would then be, does Andrew Bogut.
Hold on, Nick, let's do one at a time. Because
all right.
Normally I would agree with you. Normally I am all about it. If you can't win a championship, why bother? But the Celtics are in this weird limbo state right now. And we've talked about it a little bit, but if the Celtics continue to be slightly above average, we're going to talk about it quite a bit more as the season goes along, because they're in a very strange place. They've got three out of their five best players have 2 years left on their deals. Three of those five guys being Isaiah Thomas, being Avery Bradley, being Jay Crowder. All three have already earned a substantial pay increase from where they are right now. The Celtics hold bird rights on some of these guys. So what the Celtics have to do is if they're truly going to use their one max contract slot available to them, they have to use it this offseason, whether it's through a trade, a sign-and-trade, or a free agent acquisition. If they're going to spend the money, it's got to be done now. Otherwise, they're going to lose it if they plan on paying those players a year or 2 years down the line. This is the way the math works out. Al Horford came to Boston because it was a desirable free agent destination because they were a team on the rise. If this team flatlines, they lose that target of being the next team up, a team on the rise. So if Andrew Bogut gives this team, say, two more wins and wins them around in the playoffs, I think that alone is reason for bringing him in the short term, because he is a free agent. You can let him walk, but the Celtics don't want to stop this trajectory and this impression around the league of being a team on the upswing.
Yeah, I just want to jump in briefly and criticize the notion of if it doesn't win you a championship, why bother? The Celtics just signed Al Horford to a massive contract. You knew he wasn't going to win you a championship when you brought him in. So why did you bother? You know why you bother? You bother to make your team better. Like the notion that you have to win a championship.
He was signed to 4 years, Calvin.
Yeah, that's fine. But he's not going to be the move that wins you the title. Do you think 33-year-old Al Horford is going to be the guy to win your title? He's signed for 4 years. What does that mean? 4 years from now, he's going to be better?
No, Exactly. Horford at 27 wasn't going to win you a championship alone. He was never that guy. But
right.
he's a perfect fit, and he's a perfect 1A or 1B to Isaiah Thomas and Kevin Durant, or Isaiah Thomas and James Harden. And the Celtics at the time assigning him, you can't tell me he wasn't a bigger picture part of the deal in their attempts to go out there and get Kevin Durant. So did the Celtics make a $114 investment into hoping to get an all-world type of player, maybe the best player in the league or a top three player in the league? They rolled the dice. They played. They went to the casino and they played their hand. Did they come out a winner or was it a draw? It was probably closer to a draw, but they played their hand.
No, that's not my point. I'm not criticizing the signing of Al Horford. I'm criticizing the notion that you have to make every move with a title specifically in mind. You make moves to get better to hope that the next move wins you the title. You bring in Andrew Bogut not because Andrew Bogut's going to win you a title. Obviously, he's not. But you hope that he stabilizes the defense. Now, I have questions about how well he fits with the small lineup, but we can discuss those. But my point is the rationale that, hey, we can't bring this guy in because he's not the move that gets us the title. But if he gets you better and costs you little, there's no reason not to do it.
Nick?
But it's a lateral move. I don't think other players, if the concept that Patrick Gilroy was just outlining is we have to keep this momentum going so that other free agents will see it and come in and want to play for us. Does Andrew Bogut even fit into the future of this team?
Forget free.
I don't think anybody is going to be looking for my point.
You're missing my point, Nick. If this team takes a step back and wins 45 games this year, or even flatlines at 48, guess what? They're no longer the media darlings. They're no longer Sports Illustrated, ESPN. They're no longer getting covered the way they were last year. Brad Stevens is no longer talked about among the top five coaches in the league. So, no, Andrew Bogut is not a piece of the future that you sell to free agents. What Andrew Bogut represents is the Celtics' ability to continue that upward trajectory. So in the offseason, when everybody forgets about the details in which and how these teams got to their win totals, and everybody forgets about how and when they bowed out of the playoffs, and all you've got to look at is hard numbers. Well, it's a lot easier to sell a potential free agent or a sign-and-trade guy on the fact that Brad Stevens is still a top-five coach or considered a top-five coach in the league, that this team has still got two All-Stars, and this team has gone from 26 to 40 to 48 to 55 or 56, whatever it may be. If they go from 26 to 40 to 48 and stay at 48 or take a step back, that sales pitch is gone. And that sales pitch was a huge part of why Al Horford came here, because of that upward trajectory. You want to protect that as badly as you want to protect. Danny Ainge wants to protect his valuable assets that we talk so much about. Without that trajectory, those assets lose their value.
More importantly, by the way, you know who is not also going to lure in free agents? Amir Johnson, the guy that you're trading in this hypothetical situation. Amir Johnson, by the way, played 5 minutes tonight. He can't play on the floor with Al Horford because they want to occupy the same spots on the floor most of the time. They do the same things defensively, basically, and clearly Amir's lost his confidence. I don't imagine that he's going to be a huge part of the rotation or his trade value is going to increase dramatically. If you don't move him for Horford, you keep him on the team. Amir Johnson's value is going to skyrocket. Lure in free agents, become a great trade asset. I doubt any of those things are going to happen. So what are you losing when you trade for Andrew Bogut? That's what you have to ask.
What are you gaining? I understand this upward trajectory, this angle that you guys are pushing, because this is the media angle. This is something to talk about. I don't think that NBA players are looking at it the exact same way that people in the media are looking at this team. They're going to look at this team as what position can they occupy, not who's gonna, I mean, listen, we signed one big-name free agent in how long? Al Horford, in how long? And
no,
all of a sudden, we're pretending that this is like the huge,
free
agent destination?
That Please don't do that. If you bring back that damn tired Michael Felger argument that people don't come to Boston, free agents don't come to Boston, fine.
That's not what I'm saying at all.
I'm saying that they're
going to come here whether or not we match last year's win total, or we step back maybe a couple of wins, or we step back or step ahead a couple of wins. I don't think that's going to make the biggest difference.
He's right. But the difference that it makes is it makes your defense better at the rim this year. Yeah, Andrew, you're probably not going to re-sign Andrew Bogut after this year. He's a free agent. He's going to walk. But guess what? You're trying to win now. You're trying to compete in the East now. Does he make this team better for this year? He does things that Amir Johnson doesn't do. So I don't understand why you don't want to put him on your team and see if a team that needs protection at the rim, because Al Horford is more of a weak side guy, whereas Andrew Bogut can protect wall off the rim, he can set high screens, he still does a lot of good things on the basketball court, why you wouldn't at least want to try and see if you can fit that guy into what you're
doing?
Because you're not losing anything.
It's not that I don't want him on the team, it's that I don't get the excitement of Andrew Bogut as
Nobody's excited. It's desperation.
Listen to Calvin. You're telling me Calvin's not excited. Come on now.
Everybody, that's excitement in his voice right there.
I'm not even excited. What does it matter if I'm excited?
Nobody's excited, Nick. Nobody's excited about Andrew Bogut, the former number one overall pick. Nobody's saying he's going to come in here and be that guy. Well, people are getting their hopes up a little bit, and it all may be moot. If this MRI comes back bad, he's not going anywhere. That being said, the idea of a guy like Andrew Bogut, we've now watched this team for 35 regular season days. Glaring needs are exactly what this guy is good at. And by the way, if you watched the NBA Finals last year, the needs that were shown on the floor for Golden State were exactly the role that this guy filled when they won the championship the year before. His numbers are never going to jump off the page, but he takes up space. He rebounds the basketball well per 48 minutes. He's not a big shot blocker, but people think twice before going to the rim. That's all. It's something that's lacking.
Sounds like
in today's
David
NBA.
Lee.
You know what? If David Lee were in shape when he got here, maybe he would have been more valuable. And I think it's pretty shocking for a guy, a professional, with the reputation around the league that David Lee has, to come right out and say, look, I wasn't in shape. That's a whole other conversation. We got sidetracked tonight. The point is,
hey, you guys want to take a call? There's a fan on the line. If you guys want to take a call, maybe they want to talk about Andrew Bogut.
Take it. I do.
All
take
right,
the call.
Let me screen him real quick.
If people are done and tired of the Andrew Bogut conversation, I don't blame them. The fact is, the latest information is going to come out tomorrow. All you've got to do is wake up tomorrow morning, make sure you've already downloaded the CLNS radio app, or you want to head on over to the Celtics news feed channel on iTunes and on Stitcher. Larry H. Russell's got an exclusive with exclusive information and content regarding the possibility of Andrew Bogut being traded and where he may be traded to. Is Boston on that short list? Larry claims he knows right now. He is just not willing to share until the sun rises tomorrow morning. This is the Celtics post-game show right here, CLNS Radio, clnsradio.com. It's Patrick Gilroy alongside Calvin Chamberlain, Nick Sesento behind the glass. Join us on our Movement Watches toll-free phone line, 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. It is those Movement Watches toll-free phone lines we will go. It is William from Louisiana, and I believe he wants to talk about the big Australian himself, Andrew Bogut. William, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing tonight? I actually am driving back home to Lafayette from Houston after watching the Houston fan celebrate. I get to see, as a former Bostonian, I get to see two games a year, one in New Orleans, which they lost, and one here. So,
tough year.
Disappointing. However, I think one thing folks miss is that we are a developing team right now. And as such, right now what I see is two things. Al Horford playing out of position and Avery Bradley and Terry Rozier having to rebound. That is not the Celtics' future plans, and it's not what they should be working on. Instead, we're trying to salvage regular season games by playing Horford too much at center and having Rozier and AB come back and try to rebound when they should be flying out on the wings, getting the outlet, and running the ball like they did last year. I mean, right now they're a great half-court offense. It's unbelievable how they changed. And if they actually paired that with what they had last year with Sullinger being able to outlet the ball, which he was great at. They'd be leaps and bounds. And the point isn't to necessarily win the championship this year. The point is we got to stop having these guys play the wrong way for how we want to play them in the future. So I don't care if it's Bogut or if it's Scola. I mean, I don't care. I mean, you need someone who is going to fill that spot, grab some boards, and throw it out to the wings, and then let Horford play the four where he gets blocks and he plays great and he doesn't get worn down by big guys. I mean, I think this is a stopgap measure in order to let the team develop. It's that simple.
Can I jump in on the notion, guys, of Al Horford playing out of position? I heard Patrick comment on something similar earlier. You know, Al Horford was a center in Atlanta basically his entire career. He ran with Josh Smith. He's been a center for most of his career. He ran with Paul Millsap at the four. He's been a center in Boston. If you look at most teams, they don't have a guy who's significantly bigger than Horford. He plays the post defensively. He mostly plays the mid-post offensively. So I don't understand this notion, especially with most teams in the NBA going smaller, that Horford is somehow this throwback four and not a guy who can play center. They played the Rockets today. Hold on. They played the Rockets today. He's bigger than Clint Capela. Yeah, he might not be as bulky, but he's a guy who can defend Clint Capela. So what does it matter? Like, if he plays four, what are we talking about? You need a guy bigger than Horford? I feel like a lot of what the Celtics do is run a fast-paced offense. Okay, they spread the floor as much as possible. That's my issue with Bogut is you're not going to play Bogut and Horford together as the four and five. That's an unrealistic look for what Brad Stevens wants to run anyway. So I think Bogut would more likely be a shot blocker off the bench, or maybe a guy who plays limited minutes with Horford. But we'd just be looking at Johnson and Horford all over again if you add Bogut into that situation. Al Horford's a center. He's not a power
forward. Tell him that, because it's Al Horford that's come out in the last week and said he's uncomfortable playing center. And again, this is the guy that you just invested in for the next 4 years, and you at least want to give the appearance of appeasing your top-level free agent. You don't want to create friction in year one. And by the way, we've lived through this before in Boston, where, and the proof was in the pudding, by the way, where Kevin Garnett, when it looked like his days were numbered, he shifted over to the five and performed better, ironically, but he was never happy doing it. And I think that because is the age that he is, and he still should have theoretically a year or two left in his peak prime, so to speak, they're going to try to appease this guy and get him a more traditional center, at least to give the appearance that they're trying, because I know that my theory has been about the Celtics' upward trajectory mattering, okay? But I think it matters because the Celtics are trying to rewrite history here when it comes to the appeal of the city of Boston and free agents. And I think that they do want to spend that free agent money and spend it well on the right guy rather than just spending it for the sake of spending it this offseason, next offseason. So whether it's because Al Horford's got friends around the league and he says, you know what, Danny Ainge did what was best for me and allowed me to play a power forward, or whether it's when Danny Ainge knocks on somebody's door and is able to at least have the fact that the Celtics have been on this rise as a part of his pitch rather than the Celtics are stagnant and they're a mid-40s win team, which, by the way, nobody wants to be a part of because it's NBA purgatory, it's NBA hell. The Celtics don't have to be that team because they did go from 26 to 40 to 48, hopefully to low to mid-50s. The moment that trajectory stops, they become the 1980s Washington Bullets, and nobody wants to go there. So, again, it's all about ease and making – these potential free agents as comfortable as possible because the money is going to be relatively the same across the board unless, of course, they decide to stay with their current team.
Is it really about making them as comfortable as possible? Considering the fact that he's signed to a four-year contract, again, played center for years in Atlanta, I think Al Horford in particular doesn't really have the demeanor that's going – it implies that he's going to throw a tantrum free out because he has to continue playing the center position. I'd be curious to know specifically what he said about that. I've been trying to research Al Horford making center comments. The last one I can find is from 2013 in Atlanta, but as somebody who plays here, maybe you have more insight. But as a Laker fan, I have the same experience of Pau Gasol complaining for years about how he, wants to play center. Doesn't want to play center. He's a power forward. And the second that he leaves the Lakers, he goes to Chicago and plays center. Now he's playing center again in San Antonio. So with LaMarcus Aldridge, by the way, I think the notion, you know, the notion of like, I don't want to play center. How many centers in this league are out there that are just like crush out? Like, to me, it's a semantic argument because most of the time, Al Horford is the only big out on the floor regardless. So what you can call him out for what you want, but the offense doesn't usually require two bigs in the first place. Like, you can call Kelly Olynyk a center. Al Horford's still going to guard the center.
But again, you know, and I think it's all about perspective, and you and I have got very different perspectives because of where we live, the teams we root for. The Celtics aren't the Los Angeles Lakers. You know, we joke back and forth about which team's got a better history. It doesn't really matter. The fact is the Lakers, no matter how bad they were the year before, if they've got the money, they're always going to be a free agent destination. The Miami Heat, no matter how bad they were the year before, the free agents will always take their call. And yeah, the San Antonio Spurs that you referenced, no matter how bad they were, they're always going to be a free agent destination, whether it's because of reputation, because of weather, because of destination, whatever the reasons are. It can't be argued with. The Celtics have not been a free agent destination. So they need to have sort of more chips on their side of the table. And it can't hurt to have a guy like Al Horford, who is very well respected around the NBA, singing all the positive tunes that he can about Danny Ainge. And if one of those positive tunes is that, hey, it didn't work out, but Danny listened and he got me what I thought I needed, believe me, when you got a guy as thoughtful as a Kevin Durant or as thoughtful as an Al Horford, on the other end of the table, you want to give yourself the best possible opportunity to bring that guy over. So the guys that are really listening and taking Danny Ainge's phone calls and taking Danny Ainge's meetings, he doesn't have the luxury that Eric Spoelstra has. He doesn't have the luxury that the Buss family has. It just doesn't exist here in Boston. So even if it gives the Celtics a 0.0001 fraction of a chance in their corner, improves their odds by less than 1%, I think it's something that needs to be considered if this team is going to take their next leap and become a true championship contender. Otherwise, they're going to be forced to do what they've always done, and that's make sure they draft correctly, draft smart, hope to get lucky and get themselves a franchise-type player either through the draft or through trade. And as we've all learned over the years, with a team like Boston, that is a process that can take 10, 20, 26 years. It's not a fun process. It is not a short process. And the Celtics will never be that team that can say, okay, we sucked this year, but we got money. We're a destination. So we can fix this thing real quick. Maybe in Lakerland they can do that, but we can't do it here, Calvin.
I think there's a difference between Al Horford, you know, saying that he plays best at center, or even saying like I would like to play center, and the notion that like he's going to be unhappy unless he's playing center. Him demanding to be center, or him saying like, oh, I'm out of position, I can't play right. I haven't seen anything from Al Horford that suggests that he's not happy in Boston, or that, you know, because he's not playing center, or because he is playing center rather, that he's not getting what he wants and he needs a center. I think that you have to walk that fine line between giving a player what they want and letting the players dictate what happens on the court. I mean, if Isaiah Thomas comes out and says, I want to play power forward, you don't allow him to play power forward just to make other future free agents happy. I realize that's an extreme hypothetical example, but the point I'm making is, I don't think this is the wedge to whether or not Al Horford is ultimately happy or interested in recruiting free agents. He's here for 4 years. I don't think he'll have a falling out if he has to play center during those 4 years. And maybe the roster –
I don't think so either.
But
Al Horford starts at power forward alongside Amir Johnson, who has been underwhelming to say the least this season. It looks like Amir Johnson's best days have passed him by, and people forget, you know, he's part of that last class that was able to come out of high school. So yes, his age may be 30 or 31, but he's got a lot more miles on those long legs than your traditional 30 or 31 year old has in the NBA. But Amir Johnson has been, aside from maybe a handful of games, and I think that's being generous, has been rendered just about useless. So the Celtics' front court problems will persist whether Al Horford plays the 3, the 4, the 5, the 1. That doesn't matter until they upgrade that roster in some way, shape, or form. And look, everybody would like to see the drastic upgrade, and this is how we started this discussion. Everybody would love to see that drastic upgrade of a guy like Boogie Cousins joining the front court here. But I don't think that's a realistic option, at least right now in season, for the Celtics. If only because if the Kings decide, okay, we're finally going to do this, they're going to wait to figure out who's got the first pick in the draft. we've learned the hard way here in Boston that number three, number six, they don't mean anything, which means they're waiting till May to see how the draft lottery plays out, which means you're waiting until draft night or post-draft night to make a move of that magnitude if you're the Kings and you finally decided to trade this guy. So if you're looking for a short-term in-season trade, a quick fix, it's not going to be Boogie Cousins, and there are limited guys available in the NBA. There are limited seven-footers available, period, that could potentially even slightly upgrade you over what you have right now. But again, the Celtics are in desperate need of help because Amir Johnson has been drastically underwhelming.
Wait, you just hit on how semantical this argument really is. You called Amir Johnson the center starting next to Al Horford. Why is he the center? He's shorter than Al Horford, has a shorter wingspan. Al Horford guards the bigger guy on the other team, and Al Horford plays in the post more than Amir Johnson. This is just technically calling him the center. With Amir Johnson starting next to Horford, which has happened most of the time with them starting, to my mind, Horford's been the center, but it doesn't really matter in the offense either way, right? But you're arguing that Amir Johnson's just – I don't see how that's arguable.
Well, it does matter, and unfortunately we're running out of time here, but I would like to pick up this discussion with you because we should really break down how the Celtics play Horford versus how they play Amir Johnson, whether it be the pick and roll, the pick and pop on the offensive end, Al Horford's ability to step out and be comfortable shooting a three where Amir kind of doesn't look right out there, the Celtics spacing on the floor, which is that's unarguable how much better it is with Al Horford out there versus Amir Johnson. Amir Johnson, yes, you're right. Inches-wise, he's not quite as tall as Al Horford. He's not your traditional center in that way. But other than that, he plays a center position. I like a guy like Jordan Mickey, who is drastically undersized at 6'7". Nobody's going to argue that he – technically, the way that he plays the game is much more of a center than he is a three or a four traditionally in the NBA. I think Amir Johnson carved out his niche in Toronto as a bit of an undersized center, and he did it well. He blocked shots. He rebounded the basketball. Never developed much of an off-the-dribble game. Never really developed much of a consistent three-point shooting game, and never really developed much of a pick-and-pop game. Always a reliable pick-and-roll offensive player. So everything that he's done throughout his career has been tailored around being your more traditional center, other than the fact that he wasn't born with God-given height and length the way that you would like, ideally, your center to be.
Carl Anthony Towns, Marc Gasol, Joel Embiid, DeMarcus Cousins, all these guys are taking threes now. Does that mean they're not centers because they shoot more from the perimeter than they used to? They're still defending the post, which is what Al Horford does more than Amir Johnson, who, again, Amir Johnson doesn't post up half as much as Al Horford. I just think that the definition of center is so lost, and you talk about traditional centers. Amir Johnson faces up way more than he, posts up back. Yeah, he gets offensive rebounds and putbacks in that scenario, but it's not like you give him the ball a lot when he's, traditionally Shaq style has a man in down and then he dunks for him. Amir Johnson is more of a face pick and roll game anyway. Especially then Al Horford, who does post. Granted, it's often more of a high post, but because Horford can shoot over people. To my mind, offensively, for the most part, other than the fact that he has more of a range than Amir, plus an offensive center position, and effectively, there's no Horford to bigger guys.
If you're just tuning in now, you're listening to the Dallas Mavericks, Amir Johnson, Al Horford Celtics postgame show. It's been an interesting ride tonight. The Celtics lose in Houston. Final score 107-106. Calvin, you and I are going to have to agree to disagree in regards to the technicalities with the four versus the five, because I think that you're right. I think that I'm right. I think it's a changing position and one that we should certainly spend more time on as the season goes along, especially if the Celtics continue to be underwhelming in the rebounding, block shots department, their ability to defend at the rim, second chance points, giving up way too many offensive rebounds. For all those reasons and so many more, and besides, the fact that you're one hell of a debater. I mean, I don't know if you were in debate club in high school or what you do for your real job during the day, but I hope that whatever you do for a living, you are utilizing some of your ability to debate because you are damn good at it. But I have one question before we go, Calvin.
Yes.
Because I'm not sure which way you lean. I don't think that the prospect of Andrew Bogut, let's assume he's healthy, is getting you excited that the Celtics could become a drastically better basketball team. All that being said, tomorrow morning, will you be curious or excited to hear and see what sort of bit of breaking news Larry H. Russell is going to share?
I can imagine what that might be. I, you know, he's to blow me away, man. I'll come in with some high expectations. That's that much.
So again, tomorrow morning, what you want to do is pretty simple. Larry H. Russell's got some late-breaking information in regards to potential Celtics trade target Andrew Bogut. The possibility of him finishing out the season at some point here in Boston may or may not exist. Larry knows the inside scoop. What you need to do if you want to get that information is tomorrow morning when you wake up. It's going to be available to you on the Celtics newsfeed channel. If you don't have access to it right now, it's super simple to get access to the Celtics newsfeed channel. Just search Celtics newsfeed on iTunes and Stitcher. And of course, the easiest way to do this and to get every bit of late breaking information brought to you by CLNS. By the way, we are the leading online provider of audio and video content for the Celtics, so this goes beyond just tomorrow morning. Just get the CLNS Radio app. It's the easiest solution to everything. It's available for Android and iTunes. Just search it in your particular marketplace. Don't forget, the Celtics did lose tonight in a heartbreaking fashion. The latest in information coming out of Houston, we brought to you by CLNS. Our very own Josue Pavone is live in Houston right now, getting insider interviews, inside information, some insight from Brad Stevens and his team as to how the Celtics will rebound, just a little pun there, how they will rebound from a crushing defeat, a last-second defeat, a game in which the Celtics really, I think, should have walked away from Houston with a victory. So Josue Pavone is down there in Houston in the locker room right now. He'll get high-definition video right up to the internet. What you want to do is check out the Garden Report on our YouTube. There'll be exclusive post-game interviews and reaction for tonight's game in Houston. Josue Pavone, our very own guy down there in Houston doing his thing. Again, you just check out the Garden Report and you check out CLNS Radio on our YouTube channel. That's just about going to do it for us this evening. The Celtics are back in action on Wednesday. I believe it's the Orlando Magic. Haven't had a chance to take a look. Again, another difficult game, but winnable game. Again, most of these games here in the month of December, you could classify as very winnable, but not easy to win. I don't think anything this season has been easy for this edition of the Celtics. And until they get things right in the front court, whether that's with guys that are currently on the roster or with an infusion of a guy like, say, Andrew Bogut, I think there will continue to be ups and downs. But what is very interesting is going into tonight's game, so I can't speak after that, but going into tonight, despite all the ups and downs, despite the inconsistent play, the Celtics were third in the conference, and they had won 7 out of their last 10 games, just 2 games behind Cleveland. I'm sure those numbers took a bit of a hit tonight. Check it out tomorrow morning, see the latest on where the Celtics are in the standings, but the point is, they are not too far off. It's not going to take much to fix this team. So, yes, Calvin and I are able to debate. Nick Sesento is able to hop in and be the voice of reason, which is just, there's so many variables when Nick Sesento is the voice of reason, but that's what he was tonight. And that's good news. It means that the Celtics are getting better, and we are really spending an hour and a half nitpicking the difference between and the value between an Amir Johnson and an Andrew Bogut. Believe me, it's better than Ricky Davis talk. I did that for far too long on far too many radio stations. This is the Celtics Post Game Show. It is CLNS Radio. Your final score tonight, Houston 107, Celtics 106. Celtics back in action Wednesday night against the Orlando Magic. For my co-host, Calvin Chamberlain, and my good friend, Nick Sesento, I am Patrick Gilroy. We'll see you guys all back here on Wednesday evening.